So every Christmas holidays, around Christmas time, the place I work at, we get about 3 weeks off. Last year I was kind of broke, so I was in town, and I tried to find something to do. We had just bought this spanking new traffic generator that can do wire speed gigabit levels. So I had to find some good use to put it to. It actually started as a philosophical question I had. Well, how fast can the penguin fly? Then I found out it can't fly. And in fact, it struts, it can't even walk fast enough. But one of the facts I found on this web page here is that it's a very fast swimmer. In fact, it can swim 15 miles per hour. Greg, who's a colleague of mine, tells me a lot of things about penguins. Apparently, females are recognizable by soiled marks on their backs where the male penguins try to climb on them or something. So anyway, so around that time, I started to try and test how fast I can route on Linux. So this here is a traffic. This is a traffic. The test setup. You have a SmartBits traffic generator hooked up to ETH 0. It gets routed back to ETH 1. And over here, you have very good statistic tools, which measure average rates and how many packets made it through, latency, and a lot of other things. The only thing I did measure was the throughput. There was 4 million packets which were released from here back to back. So depending on the rate, if it was 100 megabits, you have a packet every 0.96 microseconds. This was a single CPU machine, 350 megahertz, 64 megs of RAM. It had a four-port Tulip card from Xinix, which has the 21143 chip. Pretty nice chip there. And so back all this all the way here back, and the statistics are collected over here.
What kernel are you using?
Yeah, so I tried, but at that time it was 2, 3, 4, 51 or 48, I can't remember.
After the soft net stuff.
Just, I did some of these tests with softnet actually, but it hadn't been released officially at that point. So I did this, I can't remember the exact kernels that I used. I have them noted somewhere. But it was around December, so 2351 had just, 2348, I think. I could be wrong. I have to look at my notes. But I did repeat this test back again in April, just to validate.
For port card? Is that like the adapter card?
Yeah,
okay.
But this was made by Xinix.
Okay, so it has PCIe
in. No, it does not. This is just.
The adapter card.
Oh, I see, okay. So I did repeat this test in April 2214 and 2399 pre-8. At that time, there was a lot of VM problems, and I chatted with Rick Van Riel. He gave me a 3-4 liner. Basically, every time after the 10,000 packets or so, the machine just oopsed and I had to reboot. So this 3-4 liner did fix that. I was happy. This lab poisoning wasn't killing me that much because I was sending 64-byte packets, very small. So just to give you an approximation of, so that you don't see that Linux can't do much, it can't route that fast. It can. What I was doing is the standard performance testing with 64-byte packets, which generate about 150,000 interrupts per second on that interface if you're doing 64-byte packets at 100 megabits. If you take the 64-byte packet and multiply by 10, and if you can do 100 megabits, that means you can do a gigabit with 640-byte packets. Well, the average LAN packet is about 1,000, I think, 1,000 bytes. So that should give you the scope of how, of the next slides that I'm going to show. Of course, there's a PCI issues in the case of the PC. So here's a diagram which shows the input I was pumping at this rate. This is what I was getting out on ETH1. Right, so you can see it's linear up to about 25 megabits, right, and then it up to about 23 megabits, I think. And then it peaks at about 26, 27 megabits, and it starts going down. This is a cubic spline approximation of the data. So there's no negative numbers there, right? So it's about 28 up there. And again, because it was approximated, it looks more like 25 or so. It goes down, and about 65 megabits, basically the system is dead. Nothing is coming out on the other side. Now, there's a lot of very good stuff on the Linux kernel that not many people are aware of. There's something called hardware flow control, which is written by Alexei. So that time I was talking to Alexei on some email, and he says, maybe you should turn this thing on. So I turned it on. This is very hardware specific. So your driver has to support hardware flow control. There's already patches for Tulip, which is what I ended up using. There's the NE2000 has a patch, and I think that's about it. But the concept is very simple. There's also the fast routing stuff, which avoids the general data path that packets do take when they come into the system. And the only it can do very high rates, as I'm going to show you. Except it avoids, you can't do firewalling with this, but you can do QoS on the egress. So the way hardware flow control works is you look at the backlog queue on the top layer.
Does this mean that IPsec doesn't work either?
Yeah, it won't work with the fast routing code. Yep, there is actually such a switch on the kernel, in the compile options. Not many people use this, as I said. I'm sorry? Yeah, so even TCP dump won't see your packets if you're using fast routing, because it never hits the backlog queue.
No, it's turned off in this case.
Yes, there's a check. I never submitted that patch. So the only disadvantage is you can't do firewalling. It doesn't follow the normal path. But you do switch the packets across, and you can do QoS on it. So you can do full DiffServ if you wanted. Robert Olson was here as well, has done a lot of work on the Tulip. He's played a lot with SKB recycling and has added interesting things to it. I ported this to SoftNet 2.3 around that time in order to experiment with it. So these features are in the kernel. The Tulip changes are not in the kernel proper. You have to apply a separate patch. So here's 2.2.14 with hardware flow control turned on. As you can see, we never go to zero. And yes, we are quite stable out there. So it's very it was quite exciting to see this. And with this, you can do full firewalling. IPsec is not a problem. And there's a lot of CPU left doing nothing, so you can run a lot. You can be compiling the kernel while you're doing, while your router is busy forwarding packets. So with fast routing, which bypasses the normal data path, no problem doing 100 megabits from ETH0 to ETH1. There's a small glitch there, but it's probably experimental issues or setups. Here comes pre-8. The peak is much smaller, as you can see. And again, I think it has to do with the virtual memory problems. So for the rest of my slides, I'm not going to focus on 2.2. I was trying to focus on 2.3 or 2.4 lately. So here's you turn on hardware flow control, and still doesn't improve that much. We never go to zero. Again, as I said, this is a cubic spline approximation. That's not really the low point. It's probably somewhere here. There's a straight line there. So now with fast routing, we can't do 100 megabits. Right? What you get is about 92 megabits or so at the maximum case. So now, if I compare with 2.2, 202 is doing a lot better with single processor. So what you see there is the 2.2 hardware flow control on, the 2.3 hardware flow control on, the 2.2 regular plain kernel is the blue one, and the 2.2, the 2.3 pre-8 is right there. If I'm incoherent, I have to apologize. I was some evil people kept me up last night. So,
yeah. We want names.
So at this point, there was still about a week to go, so I got interested in finding out why this was happening. So this is what happens on Linux. Actually, it does happen. The same thing happens on NT, Solaris, BSD. Well, according to the Stevens books, this is what happens on BSD. I don't want any BSD fanatics to start throwing tomatoes at me. So what happens is you get a packet, interrupt. This box here shows an interrupt context running. An interrupt happens, a packet gets delivered to what's known as a backlog queue, right? Then the bottom half is marked in 2.2, or a soft IRQ will come by later on to dequeue from this queue, set it up the stack, which could then bring it down through the transmit path towards ETH. For example, it came through ETH 0, it's going out on ETH 1 at that point. Now, one interesting feature that I found there was that once this queue is full, any incoming packets will be dropped. So I thought that was interesting, because I thought it was a mistake, actually. And so something called net dev dropping gets raised at this point. And there could be just one packet in the queue, but you still drop that incoming packet. So this is the system congested flag. So the only time that it will be turned off is if you empty the queue totally. There's no packets in there. You empty them, then the flag gets turned off and new packets get accepted. It's a brute force way congestion control, but there's no way in hell the driver is going to stop interrupting you because you're dropping its packets.
Where does the back thing get thrown back? Is that the bottom
half? I'm sorry. The bottom half is right there. It's the one that's doing
so
the dequeue.
Still in the interrupt context, though.
No, this is interrupt context. Right? So the interrupt happens.
Interrupt context, you're no longer blocking interrupts when you do the bottom half. You're still in the interrupt stack.
It's a software interrupt context. He's denoting this as hardware interrupt context.
Okay.
Which is different. Right. So I figured, okay, I found a bug, let me fix it, right? So, but before I went that far, I'd say I'll check, maybe it's the PC interrupt controller that has a problem, right? So I made the tulip drop every packet it receives. It does process it, but it never sends it to the backlog queue. Instead, it just drops it. So, I'm skipping a slide here. Yeah, okay, so I put some probes in the kernel. Some stuff was being output on /proc. I have some user tools which were collecting data. Obviously, it looked like live log to me. If this guy was interrupted for a very high rate, the bottom half will never run. That's why at 70 megabits, you start seeing zero output. So just by suspicion that there was live log problems. I also suspected this congested flag. I figured, okay, this was an easy fix. I remove it and see what happens. So then I put some probes into the kernel and collected information in /proc. So my initial testing was on the interrupt controller. I figured before I do anything, maybe it's the hardware. So my CPU, my machine is a dual processor. It had only one process on it, though. So I turned on the APIC and I made the tulip drop every packet it receives instead of sending it up on netif receive. And no problem. It can do 100 megabits, 148,000 kilopackets per second. 148 kilopackets per second. Then I turned off the APIC, and there was no problem. The only weird thing was if I tried to send on two interfaces, on ETH1 and ETH0 at the same time, I could only do 80,000 packets on each of them separately. So it adds up to about 160,000 packets per second. I wasn't sure whether that was a hardware problem. I've been talking to Robert Olson. He thinks this thing has a PCI bridge on it. He thinks it has something to do with that. But that's a question mark. I never pursued that any further. It's something to do. So So for both cases, the way I figured out that all the packets were received was the smart bits, which is the hardware generator, recorded how many packets it sent, and ifconfig will show me exactly the same number of packets. Now, these are packets. So this is now my proc stuff was collecting data. So on a regular pre-8, plain pre-8, what you see is packets getting dropped when the queue was full. So these were being dropped legally. There was a FIFO problem. The queue is full, you drop the packet. As you keep, so here is a number about, we have about 10,000 packets at this level. At 10, up to 20 megabits, there's zero. Nothing gets dropped. But as you keep going up, so you start seeing that, you know, you hit about 80 megabits on all the 4 million packets are almost getting dropped. Actually, what happens is 300 packets get queued. That's the backlog maximum queue size. Nothing else gets out of there until all the packets have been dropped because the queue is full. And when you when the traffic generation stops, the 300 packets finally get to the end that were sitting on the queue. So there is about 300 packets there, which were not being dropped. But you know, this is the scale is very huge. On the other side, on flow control, because it was disabling the receive path, as soon as it detected the backlog being full, it sent a message to the driver to shut itself off. And the driver shuts itself off until the queue becomes empty again, and it turns it on. In that case, there are still packets being dropped. I think it's a problem with the driver. There's some packets which are escaping, maybe through receive no buff interrupts or something like that. There's about maybe 5,000 packets getting dropped about at 100 megabits. So there's absolutely no problem with this flag that I'm talking about if you're using hardware flow control. Because you get shut off, you will never get a chance to send packets when there's only one packet in the queue. If you've been shut off, you will be told when to come back again. So now, the net dropping flag. Well, I collected data on, well, I couldn't put everything up here because some of them were weight scaled much higher and doesn't make sense to show what's here. So at 10, 20 megabits, no problem. At 30 megabits, the x-axis shows the how many packets were dropped when the queue was that number of packets. So, for example, over here, there was only one packet on the queue, but about 5,000 packets were dropped during that run that I made. When here you're getting closer to the full queue, you're not. These are legally dropped packets, basically. But you know, what's the point of dropping a packet when you have gone through the context switching? You've accepted the interrupt, you've brought it all the way up, and then you decide to drop it when there's only one packet in the queue. So logically, it didn't make sense to me. Maybe there's a good reason. I have to talk to Alexei. I never talked to him about this. So it seems like it was some brute force congestion control. I was very disappointed by turning that off. I didn't see much improvement. There was some improvement, right, as you noticed. But it wasn't much. So it's about maybe 2 to 3 megabits at the peak there, extra. And up after this point here, it's just the same death. You just go to zero. There's absolutely no difference. So, but there was still a small improvement. It didn't add much value, though. So this was removing about 3 lines from NetIF receive. Now, improvement 2. Donald has a very nice structure to his driver style. He has this thing called, I think, overwork limit or something like that. And the reason he had it, I've seen him post this on NetDev, is as you overwork, it's because of shared interrupts. You basically, it's like simple scheduling where you yield the CPU because you've held it for too long. What I found with this Tulip driver is it has a very nice feature called mitigation. Right? You can tell it, don't interrupt me for 4 packets. Or, you know, so it's just a bunch of registers that you write to, or interrupt me after 10 microseconds, even if you have packets there waiting for me. So on overwork, what I did was to tell it not to interrupt me either for four packets or for four packet times. So it had the packets there, but it will never send them to me. Every time I had to hit this peak where I want to yield the schedule, I say the next time to yield the CPU, I will just set that register and say, interrupt me when you're ready, after four packets. I think I used the number four. I have to look at the code. So that did improve things. At this point, I had hardware flow control turned off. Right? It was only on overwork I would mitigate with four packets. And on I will continue until the DMA ring was used up again to match the on each interrupt the same number that so it was a hard coded number, it's 20 packets I think. So I then combined the two. Now I turned on hardware flow control with both hardware flow control on and the mitigation on overwork, and the results were quite interesting. So now this is I never did this on 2.2, so I don't know. I think I might get better results. So things are starting to look good, but I had a week to go. So I think so. So this with a lot of compliments. So, with a lot of compliments to Van Jacobsen for inspiring this. This is one of the simplest feedback control system you'll ever come across. Right? So up here is the is a sensor. It senses the it senses the water level, and it shuts off the flow of the water in. So I wasn't exactly in the washroom when I got inspired by this, but you know, so if you flash, the queue starts going down. So think of this as a queue size. It starts going down, and the valve there sends a message to the water refiller to add more water to the queue, to add more, you know, to the driver in this case. So you give me more packets, and as it fills up, it sends a message to say, slow down, you're filling up too fast. So with that inspiration, I added a simple binary feedback. I changed interface receive. Instead of returning void, it returned a number which said the queue is full or the queue is not full. So now with that hardware flow control and mitigation as well on overwork, so now I will also mitigate if I'm told the queue is full. See, before it was just blind. You're just sending the packet. You don't know whether there's congestion or not, and you don't know what happens to your packet. It gets dropped, it gets queued, and you don't. Nobody. I thought that was kind of surprising that the NetIF receive was returning void. So, all this did. This was about four lines of change in NetIF receive, and a few lines on the mitigation code to take care of not just overwork limit, but rather the return code from NetIF receive. So things are looking good. We're beginning to look good, but still had some more time to go. So now I said, okay, why am I just telling it to back off for four packets? Maybe I could be a little bit smarter. If the queue is not, if the queue is full, I had a table basically, and I had a pointer which kept moving across that table. And on each interrupt, if I sent four packets and nobody complained, I would move the pointer up. So this the 21.143 allows me to mitigate up to 16 packets. So I'll start by saying, okay, I should mitigate for 16 packets. And then at some point on the next interrupt, I'll say, okay, nobody's complaining, I'm going to do 15 packets. And I kept moving up until it was one interrupt per packet, basically. That did improve things, but I couldn't explain this peak here. Right? So you can see that we hit about 50 megabits. And what I have to say is that you can do full firewalling with this. I never tested that part, but this is the normal data path. So there was a small peak, but again, at 100 megabits, we were hitting 50 megabits now on the output. So that was pretty impressive, I thought. But this peak was not a good thing. And every time I did run that test, I repeated this a few times, I was still getting those same, that same peak there. So then I added a congestion window, so TCP influence here, right? So now I would not just mitigate on the 16 parameters I had, but rather also add a congestion window which says how many packets do I send up on each time, right? So with the congestion window, I was able to sort of flatten this part, as you can see, and move it up a little bit more, right? I'm still doing binary feedback at this time, which is what mostly TCP does. But so it peaks at about 52 megabits, goes down, but stays flat there, right? So next, now I add multi-level feedback instead of binary feedback, right? I just tell you exactly where on the queue you are, and you adjust your parameters and congestion window based on the information I passed you. And it gets a little bit better. As you can see, it goes up, and on the 100 megabits, we do better than this guy, which so far had proved to be a good result. So I was taking instantaneous packet sizes, instantaneous queue sizes. You go up there, you just probe, and you say, okay, there's 20 packets in the queue. I'm going to tell the driver slows down or ups its rate. What I ended up doing was to say, what if I started playing with average queues instead of being influenced by bursts of packets, which will fill up a bust from someone for 300 packets? What I'll do is I'll take a long-term measurement of the queue. It's very TCP also, again, Van Jacobson, with the RTT measurements, for example. So that did flatten things.
So were you taking a running average?
Yes, I was, of the queue. I wasn't doing the variance or anything like that. So then I ended up, so this was done per packet, right? Every packet came in there, I'll compute the average and try it and feedback to the driver some information. I thought, okay, I'll move the average measurement out on some timer code. So I took it out of the rotor routine, which is about 20 lines. I had 5 return levels. So I just told it, if I give you level 5, you back off a lot more. If I gave you level 4, if I gave you a 0, it means you can go up. So I divided the queue into 5 regions. That didn't work out too well. I was getting less performance than this. So just kind of, so I never had time to work on that code. But basically, the timer will expire every 10 milliseconds, look at the queue, compute the average, and tell the driver, until NetFIF receive that, you have to tell the next arriving guy to that the queue is full, even if it wasn't full.
Probably what was happening is it was too late to tell the driver by the time he saw it in the timer.
I think
not
so.
Not good enough granularity of
that's right.
Information.
Yeah, so I think it will be much more difficult for higher speed. So sampling per packet was the best you can ever do. You just added about 5 more lines of code. But if you are under such heavy load, maybe it doesn't make a difference anyways. If you sampled at per packet, if you didn't do this, you probably end up at 0 this time, right? So, what's my next slide? Okay, so that's the executive summary. If you look at over this area here, the difference is infinity, because if you take this value over that... Of course, some marketeers would have done that, but I just X, right? It's about twice. So although I use this for routing, this is something I should have mentioned earlier on. This could actually improve servers, sniffers. I think we can bring up taxes numbers with this. I'm pretty sure we can. Now I started thinking, okay, what happens when there's two interfaces, because they all go to the same backlog queue, they all try, one is transmitting at 50 megabits, the other guy is just doing a ping, one packet per second or something like that. Well, the guy with the 50 megabits is obviously going to occupy the queue more, and he's going to starve out the guy who's trying to do the ping. So this is a problem that is there today. So I did a quick test, and it clearly shows there is a starvation problem. This is an area that I didn't follow up very much on, but and it's mostly because of the single queue scheme. The advantage is that in Linux we have state information already stored. We already know what the device is doing, who's putting up packets on the queue. So if you add a couple of variables to the net dev structure, you should be able to fix this problem. What I did was I introduced some stateless scheme, which is stolen from RAID, random early detection. I just called it random lie, right? Basically, occasionally you sample the queue, So you introduce several threshold levels. Say the maximum queue size is 300 packets. I'm going to introduce 100 packet size to be the one of the thresholds and 200 packet sizes to be the next level of thresholds. In between that, I'm going to occasionally compute a net average, net random number. And if this net random number exceeds something, then I'm going to send the driver back information to tell the queue is full. So this is based on the fact that if you're sending a lot of packets to the driver, you're more than likely to be hit than anybody else. So the harder they come, the harder they fall. So, of course, I'm assuming the drivers are cooperating, right? They're taking this information. The nice thing is we have control in Linux as opposed to be on the internet where some guy is trying to hog all the bandwidth. So here's my fairness results. There's the classical fairness measurement equation by Jane. At this point, I thought I'd have run out of time on this presentation, so some of the details are missing. But what I did is use that equation. Packets were still going on from ETH0 to ETH1. This was a fixed rate at... I was trying to do 5 megabits over here. And with this one, I repeated the same experiments again. I pump from 10 megabits all the way to 100 this way, and I see what he receives, and I record both the details of what he receives and what the other one does. And yes, random lie did improve performance. However, it did improve the fairness index. But it had a problem. Now if I turn this guy off, I get only about 40 megabits as a peak over here. So if there was only one user on the system, then it's useless. It gives you less performance. So this is one area that still needs exploration. The simplest brute force way is you start maintaining stats, who's been putting packets on the queue, whose packets are still there, and if they've been taken off. Start maintaining an average queue per device, basically. Then you could do QoS on the input now. So, SMP. So I did repeat this with was the processor? P2, 550 megahertz, 256 megs of RAM. It was an ASUS motherboard with the same pre-8. I was very disappointed. I thought now with two processors given SoftNet the way it queued on each back, there was one backload per CPU, I was going to do 100 megabits. The difference is not that high. It's about 14,000 packets per second compared to that guy there. This is Linux, nothing else. Plain pre-8 on SMP. You can do a lot more than with a single process. The problem is, you try to do LS there, it will never come back until you stop. So although you see it peaking at, 60 megabits, is it? Yeah. You can do 60 megabits with full firewalling and everything in use, but it's sort of a useless number because you can't do anything. So if I was running OSPF on that system, it would be starved. Now with hardware flow control, this improves greatly. There's a lot of CPU left over. With the scheme that I added with the feedback control, etc., there's not much difference. This difference here is about 14,000 packets. So I think I have a theory of why this is happening. This is not an area explored very much. Robert has his own theory based on locking, mine is based on this net dev dropping. I think this, what happens is if one queue is full, the driver gets shut off. As a result, the other CPU, which has an empty backlog, can't process this specific interface. That's my theory. So we have to fix net dev dropping. I have a very strong feeling we can do 100 megabits with two processors, full firewalling, and Robert and I are on a mission to do that. So I think if you're walking on the hallway, you must have seen some big flashing box over there. These patches are running this show. So we have our own OSPF running in a redundant mode, but those four cards up there have 143 chipsets, 8 on each interface, on each CPU, and actually I lied. These were slides were made a while back, so I ended up backing out of 2.4 because I didn't want to crash. You know, if anything happens, someone's going to kill me. So I backed to 2.217 pre-11, and I have started backporting the patches. Then I didn't have much time to 2.2. So right now it's running 2.2 pre-17. Now this is a more interesting one. Robert Olson has a system. This is in Sweden, which is running with hardware flow control. These are two Linux machines running as routers on a P2 350 megahertz with hardware flow control turned on. This is one of the largest FTP sites in the world. I think it's rated as either number 3 or number 4. So behind here, there's a cluster of FTP machines. And the combined results that Robert has seen have been around 155 megabits per second sustained rate using these Linux routers. He's running full BGP peering between those two domains. He's got on average about 60,000 routes when these measurements that I'm going to show you were taken. The day before yesterday, we were looking up at his route tables, and there was 83,000 distinct routes. I think Alexi was sitting with us, and he said, "Oh, he doesn't know how this is happening." So Linux is a very it can be used for serious routing stuff. So this is a measurement on that Robert took at his two routers on March 27th, 2000. Red Hat, I think, had just released 6.2. I could be wrong. The machine on this one here is Archive 1, and this is Archive 2, Archive R2. And as you can see, a 5-minute average snapshot shows a router 1 doing 70.1 megabits per second. The interesting thing is, of course, the number of packets is only 7,000 packets per second. What I showed you was 64-byte packets. So in the real world, it's not 64-byte packets that go through the router. So you can easily do 100 megabits, what I said, if you use the average packet size. You can do several hundred megabits. On the receiver side, well, this is an average for 5 minutes, so maybe there was 3-4 packets during that 5 minutes, but there was almost zero packets per second. And CPU utilization was about 20%. Wasn't being used that much. On the second router, you will see that there's 67.6 megabits per second, 7,333 packets on the transmit path. On the receive path, there's about 4.1 megabits per second. And CPU utilization was interestingly much higher. What's your theory there?
That router has incoming traffic. You see, the archive of R1 has no incoming traffic. If you go back to the previous picture, you see it's a function how the incoming traffic just hits one router, and the outputs from the archive are shared between the two routers. So if you add up the the transmitter, you see, 67 plus 30, it's getting added into the SDH line.
So essentially what we're arriving at is that the CPU utilization is largely, if not completely, a factor of PPS.
Yes.
Yes.
In
yes.
both directions.
Yeah. So there's still work to be done. Like I said, Robert and I are on a mission to do 100 megabits real soon now. So SMP work, we're going to talk about this before the show is over. We're targeting that work with Robert and Alexei. Multiple cards and fairness has to be improved. Investigate that bizarre thing I talked about, which you have two interfaces being blasted at, and you can only do 80,000 on each. Robert has done some measurements on CPU utilization with hardware flow control. I'm going to be releasing my patches for 2.4. I think I'll backport to 2.2. I wasn't sure when I was doing the slides whether by the time I was presenting 2.4 will be out or not. So I put a question mark, but I think I'm going to backport them. So I think that's my last slide, and I managed to get through. Okay, questions? No questions. Okay, yes?
You said you're working with Tulip. Have you done any studies on other devices and whether the Tulip...
Is it louder?
Have you done any studies on whether or not the Tulip might be a serious bottleneck in the way it does I.O. in the bus?
No. I was going to attend your talk, and... But these are kind of things that we can talk about. And,
okay. Right.
No, I haven't. Andrew.
Hardware flow control, I think you mean software flow control. Had you considered using the 802.3 Mac LAN control?
Okay, so you're talking at the Ethernet level, right?
Yeah.
Where you're sending a pulse frame or something like
that.
What's
the problem I can ask with?
Okay, so actually it is hardware flow control. Because you're with the Tulip, okay, hardware not in the sense that it sends something on the network, but you write something to a register. You just send a message to the driver, it disables the receive thread.
Okay, so it's still going to work.
Yeah, packets still come in, but the DMA gets full, they just get dropped, but you never get interrupted. So you're not stopping the flow packets, but my understanding of the... But the most generic way to do it really is not to, because the shutting off the receive interrupt is really specific to the Tulip. The best way to do it is you go and disable the interrupt receive interrupt on the driver. So that way you can do it on any driver as opposed to just being specific to the Tulip. The post stuff, no, I haven't looked at it. I know that there's a lot of incompatibilities and all kinds of things. Some switches will hang or something like that. Yeah.
You want to also shut off your DMA, if you could.
No, it's still DMA again.
I know, but if you could shut it off, you would enable other interfaces to continue operating at full bandwidth. Because PCIs, when you have four Tulips on a PCI bus,
right.
Aren't you sort of just disabling the
Tulip? I never looked at that angle, but sounds
bridge.
Okay. So anyone who knows a lot about PCI bridges can talk to us. We'll be happy. Okay, there you go. So.
Is there an address where we can find this presentation?
Yeah, it will be coming on the proceedings or somewhere on the website, I think. Yeah.
Did you ever compare a Uniprocessor and SMP? I did a couple cheesy comparisons, and it looked like on the same machine, Uniprocessor was a little bit slower in 2.4 compared to SMP.
Yeah.
The
question was if any comparison has been done with Uniprocessor and SMP, and that SMP Uniprocessor appeared to be slower than.
Yeah.
I haven't. Just the numbers I collected there. SMP is very impressive in 2.4. It scales linearly. Networking code.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, there's a mic. Okay. Whoever wants to ask a question, I guess, can use a mic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Next question. Have you done any studies on latency on this
and how
this will affect latency?
No, I didn't do any studies on latency, but the device I have, the hardware generator, can collect latency data for you.
Okay. Yeah. I was thinking about how this is going to affect, because you're doing this based on performance packets per second.
Right.
But if you do that too aggressive.
They just care about
PPS. Yeah. I know. That's
sorry, cool. I have that background, so all I care about is, I looked at was throughput.
Okay.
But I think latency is one of the things to do. I should definitely, yeah.
How much does one of these load generators cost?
They are $60,000 for four interfaces. So that's why, around Christmas time, nobody was using it, so that's why I could get access to it. Yeah. I think some guy actually did come in, but I had it at home, and he yelled at me at the New Year. So, right. Any more questions? Okay. Thanks.